Hey guys, good afternoon. Welcome to the 330 Sports Show. We are live from Youngstown Studio, and I'm your host, Justin Coffin. Obviously, a new time. We did this last Thursday. We tried it. We liked it. So we are going to go with our 3:30 start time. So, Joe, if we could put this image on the screen, I just want to remind people that you can always, if 3:30 is not a good time for you to watch the show, we usually have a lot of our listeners and audience watch non-live shows. They watch it later on in the day. So whatever's convenient for you, it's always available on our Facebook and YouTube channels. Twitter is also available through Youngstown Studio. You can always listen on any of your podcast platforms. And make sure to follow the 330 Sports Show on social media. That really helps us out. We get a lot of content out there for you today. All right, so here's what is on the show today. I have three different top five lists. We always do a top five Tuesday. We're going to go over, obviously, the Browns, some takeaways from this weekend, the Buckeyes, some takeaways this weekend. So kind of the top five thoughts for that. And today's National Brewery Day, so I thought I would just share out some of my, I'm not a big beer guy. I like bourbon. I like vodka. I like red wine. You know, in moderation, I'm like a one, you know, I like a glass of red wine or something before I go to bed, or, you know, have some vodka or vodka sodas or whatever. But, every now and then, you know, I'll get a Penguin City, or I'll do the national brands. And I'm going to list some of my favorite breweries around the Youngstown area. And I know if Lisa's out there, she's got them all covered with the Homes and Hops stuff. So if I miss any, it's not, don't take it personal. I just haven't visited it yet. So I listed my top five that I have visited in the Mahoning Valley, Youngstown area. So we'll talk about those in a little bit. So again, National Brewery Day, we're going to get into that in a minute. Browns, Buckeyes, some NFL, some college football stuff. And then the back half of the show, we're going to feature an interview I did this past weekend with Jessica Krauser. We interviewed her cousin, Jennifer Walcott, last week. And now we're going to talk with Jessica Krauser about, she has been diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's disease. She's going to talk to us all about what that's about, bring some awareness in this interview I did with her. I honestly went in there like a student. I did not know much about it. And she shared a ton of knowledge with me about what the disease is, how it affects her day to day, how you can, how she is working to sort of overcome it or keep it in check. And she's also going to talk to you about a fundraiser, which is a 5K that is happening. It's actually happening in Columbus, Ohio this weekend, but since she is right here from Boardman, they are, a lot of her family members are organizing a walk in at the hike and bike trail in Boardman this Sunday. So she's going to talk to you about that in a little bit. And, you know, again, it's great knowledge. You know, I think when people think of Parkinson's, they think of Michael J. Fox. And honestly, that was most of my knowledge I had on this disease coming into our conversation. But she really, really enlightened me and taught me a lot of stuff about what she's going through and all that stuff. So that will be on the second half of the show, probably in about 25, 30 minutes from now. And so make sure to tune in and listen to that if you're able. Okay, so let's start with our top five local breweries. You might not be able to see the entire screen, but I'll share with you my opinion on these. So since it's national, I think it's like either National Drink a Beer Day or National Brewery Day. I wasn't exactly sure. So I listed the top five local breweries, I believe, in the Youngstown area. So Penguin City, our neighbors right down the street, they are really starting to do some great work over there. And if you haven't seen it, we are going to do a live live or pre-recorded spot. I'm not sure yet. Sometime in October. And we're going to talk to Richard and Aspasia over there. And they're really going to show us around. And it's going to be really cool to see the transformation of this brewery in this old warehouse downtown. It's going to be awesome. And it's going to be a great thing to see downtown Youngstown. The next one is Birdfish. I think most people that live in the Youngstown area that like beer have probably been to Birdfish. Again, if you watch the Youngstown Studio Network, you probably see Lisa Resnick, and she does a lot of interviews with, I believe it's Greg. And again, I forget the other owner, but Greg and again, apologize for his name. It's slipping me, but they do an amazing job in Columbiana down there at Birdfish. Also, I think it's called Paladin. It's over in Austintown. It is a really cool little brewery. Check that out. They do a great job over there. The one I like, it's got a very cool, I have never been to Lisbon until about a month ago. And we did this like little bus stop type thing where we hit a bunch of different local breweries, and we stopped at Numbers in Lisbon. Awesome place. It's very, very cool. It's really cool looking. They have a great outside setup. They have a stage there. Very cool. I highly recommend that. And a beer I really like with them is like a blood orange beer. It kind of has like this, it's not like too fruity. It's not too overpowering, but it's just like a really good like sipping beer in the summer, fall, like warmer weather. So I recommend that. And then finally, we got Modern Methods, excuse me, in Warren. And they're another one that's highly thought of in our area. And again, I probably forgot some, I probably missed some, but I have not been to those places. So I didn't want to put them on my list. So no disrespect, nothing personal, but I hope we can check out some more in our area. So that is the first top five list. We are now going to switch now to the NFL. We're going to start with the Cleveland Browns. So last week, I put this out for our Thursday show, and I said, here are the top five things I want to kind of look for with the Browns. So I said, I'm a big Justin Fields fan, but I hope he has a great career, but not on Sunday. Obviously, he had a terrible game, but that is not just his fault. That's coaching. That's offensive line. That's a lot of things in play. And the Browns defense, give them credit where credit was due, because we'll get to them in a minute. But they dominated that entire game. Also, Odell Beckham Jr. came back. We'll talk about that. So let's get into the takeaways I have from this game. So the first thing, obviously, is the defense. Myles Garrett, 4.5 sacks by himself, which is a team record, now leading the NFL in sacks, 5.5 on the season, just passing Chandler Jones of the Arizona Cardinals. The Browns defense as a whole, 9 sacks. And listen to this, 47 total yards allowed for the entire game, 47 yards. The Bears average something like 1.1 yards per play, which is absolutely insane, especially in this NFL that we're in with, you know, Joe, you talked about it last week, these high energy offenses with the passing games and things like that. A lot of times teams hit 47 yards in the first 2-3 plays of the game with their up-tempo offenses. So again, the defense deserves a ton of credit. Justin Fields, by the end of the game, and he's going to have better games. He really is. But, you know, again, just not in a great situation. I know the Chicago Bear fans are not happy with Matt Nagy, their head coach. And honestly, he might be the coach on the hottest seat in the NFL right now. So we'll see what lies ahead with him. But not a great performance by the Chicago Bears offense. Another key takeaway for me in this game was Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt had 155 total yards of offense, 81 of those on the ground rushing, including a 29-yard touchdown, I believe, and 74 receiving yards, and again, with one touchdown. Odell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. had a nice return. He had 5 catches, 77 yards. He had 1 run for 10 yards. So 87 total yards in your first game back in about 11 months from an ACL injury. And he looked the part. It looked natural out there. It didn't look like they were trying to force the ball to him or anything like that. So I think they really have something back with him. He's obviously going to need some rest here and there, or after a game, it might not feel quite the same. He is now 29, doesn't sound old, but 29 in NFL years, that's kind of getting up there. So he is 29, and, you know, coming off an ACL injury, that could take a little bit of time after each game. But, you know, they have everything they need. Cryotherapy, they have, you know, saunas, massage therapists, whatever it might be, they have it, and they can get these guys recouped as long as they, for the most part, stay healthy. And then finally, Joe, you'll love this because you've always been a critic of our kickers.
Yeah.
But we might have finally found a kicker. Chase McLaughlin, 4-for-4, including a 57-yard field goal and 2 extra points. So a pretty good day for him. So that was a big takeaway for me, because we'll get to the Baltimore Ravens in a minute, but they have an elite weapon. They literally get to the 50-yard line, you can almost guarantee 3 points for the Ravens, because their kicking game is so, so good. And if the Browns have, I'm not going to say a weapon, but if they have someone reliable, I mean, that makes a huge difference. What do you think?
What do you think the deal was before? Why we've had such kickers? I mean, Phil Dawson spoiled the crap out of us, right?
Right.
And so we just got used to it never being an issue. Mm-hmm. But then we went for a good, like, since we've been, you know, back literally,
sure,
that we haven't had a reliable kicker. I mean, they've had spurts, they can hit distance, but it wasn't something that you just were go-to people.
Yeah. You know, and Cody Parkey wasn't overall that bad last year, but didn't seem to have it this year. Yeah. And I know he had an injury, so they cut him. I'm trying to think of some of the other kickers in the past. One of them now kicks for Minnesota, I believe, who were playing this weekend, and he missed a chip shot, which would have won them the game, a week or two ago. But I think it is not an easy thing to do. You know, everybody looks at the kicking game and, you know, it's one of those things, you either have it or you don't. And
it's such a psychological position. It's not about leg. It really isn't.
Right. And it is for one guy in particular that we're going to talk about, Justin Tucker, here in a minute, but you're absolutely right. It's like, it's not necessarily those 50 to 60 yard kicks. You need those 30, 40 yard field goals, and you need them to convert the extra points afterwards, which now is not a given anymore in today's NFL. So those were my main takeaway from the Cleveland Browns this weekend. We will now be on to the Minnesota Vikings. We're going to take a look at them a little bit more on Thursday's show. But the Browns have opened up. I believe they're about 1.5-point favorites on the road, which is, which tells me if that game was in Cleveland, they would probably be roughly about a 4 to 5-point favorite. So Vegas likes the Browns a little bit this weekend. So that bodes well for us, and hopefully keeps up. So I'm going to skip that one. I do want to go to this next slide just to reiterate these stat lines. So first downs in the game, Browns 26, Chicago 6. Third downs, Chicago 1 of 11, the Browns 8 of 17, Dang. Which, you know, if you can go about 50%, that's great. Fourth downs, the Browns kind of stunk early on. They went for those 2 fourth downs. And you know what, to Stefanski's credit, he thinks those fourth down, like analytics wise, it shows, hey, that gives you a better chance to win. So I am for it. As long as you're not going for it at like your own 20 or 30 yard line and giving them the ball, you know, where they're guaranteed points, I think it's okay. Especially the Browns defense looks improved. We'll talk about them in a little bit, but, again, if you can shut the door on, and you know your defense is playing well, that gives you the keys to say, hey, we can go for a lot more fourth downs if our defense can.
Well, and it has to work out in critical deals. If you're a sucker, if it doesn't work out, because then, you know, you're a genius when it works out, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and everybody's got that 2020 vision, you know, that hindsight is always crystal clear, and you know, everybody's an expert. So, you know, it is what it is, but rushing, let me start with rushing yards. The Browns only allowed 46 rushing yards while they had over 215 to be exact on their own passing yards. Look at this. The Browns 203 passing yards. Nothing crazy, but in a nice efficient day for Baker, the Bears. Now, you're going to see that one passing yard. So, I believe Justin Fields had 68 total passing yards. So, what the NFL does now statistically is they take the net. So you subtract the sack yardage from your yards total. And that's why the Browns would be higher too, because the Bears had 43 yards of sacks. But the Browns had nine sacks for minus 67 yards. So 68 minus 67 leaves them with a net of one passing yard on the day.
See, that should be rushing yards. That should not be passing.
I agree. Or maybe just don't count it against either one. Maybe just count it against your total yardage.
Yes, right.
But either way, a great day. Because, people are going to look at it. I think Justin Fields was something of like 6 of 20 for 68 yards. And obviously not a good day. But when he has no time to throw, there was a couple plays. I think Myles Garrett was not even blocked. And Clowney started the deal. He got a sack. Like, basically everyone was involved. Tack McKinley got in there. I think JOK might have had a sack. It was like literally open for business in the backfield for the Browns defense. And
now you feel better about our offensive line, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That contrast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah. I mean, they did. Our offensive line did give up five sacks, but that Bears defensive front, their front seven is good. Is very good.
The linebackers are so aggressive.
Oh, I know. Khalil Mack and the guy from Georgia, his name's escaping me, but they have two really, really good linebackers, and their defensive front is huge, huge. So, and Nick Chubb did not get going in this game. That's why I think Kareem Hunt was so, so important for the Browns.
That's why you got two backs, two different styles completely.
No doubt. And guess who our leading receiver on this season is?
Who?
Kareem Hunt.
Seriously.
Kareem Hunt has the most yardage on the season. Obviously, Jarvis Landry's been out now for a week. He should be back hopefully in 2 weeks. So if injuries are going to happen in the NFL, it's the nature of the game. That was actually Jarvis Landry's first game missed because of injury in his entire career. He missed that Jets game last year. No, actually, the whole wide receiving core did because of the COVID stuff, but obviously not because of injury. So interesting stuff, but if the Browns can stay healthy and they can get everybody playing on the same page, you know, Odell, Jarvis, Higgins, Peoples-Jones, you know, everybody involved, it's going to be a great, great offense going forward. I want to look now at the entire NFL. There are 5-3-0 teams, 5-0-3 teams, and then everybody else is kind of bunched in the middle. 3-0 teams. Panthers, which is a surprise. They won on Thursday night. The Rams look dominant. The Rams look really, really, really good. They beat Tom Brady and the Buccaneers this past weekend in a really, really good game. The Arizona Cardinals. Now, to me, they're a pretty good team. The Browns have them coming up in a couple weeks, but I do not think they're dominant. I think they're kind of a little bit fluky. They won a game against Minnesota. They probably should have lost. And, you know, they haven't played the toughest schedule either. The Broncos look pretty good so far. So the Broncos are a 3-0 team. And then obviously the Las Vegas Raiders. John Gruden doing a good job. Their offense looks good. Joe, we talked about that 13 personnel that they run with the one running back, three tight ends. And that kind of gets them, they're running the ball a little bit, and that gets them the downfield passing attack going. So those are the 3-0 teams. The 0-3 teams, big surprise, are the Colts. The Colts, a lot of people, I think, thought would make the playoffs this year. Not looking good so far. Carson Wentz has not been too healthy. The Jaguars and Urban Meyer. Trevor Lawrence, he's going to struggle this year. Urban Meyer's going to struggle. They did have an awesome play, though, where they had that Arizona actually went for a 68-yard field goal, missed it. They had the returner back, 109-yard kick return for a touchdown. I believe his last name was Agnew. He is the first player in NFL history in back-to-back weeks to have 100-plus yard kickoff returns or returns for touchdowns. So cool stat there, but Jaguars, I mean, I thought when Urban Meyer took that job, it was going to be a long season, but I was expecting them to probably win 4 or 5 games. I can't see them getting 4 or 5 wins this year. I really, really can't.
I'm with you.
The only teams worse than them is probably the Jets. The Jets are awful. Just not a very good football team. The New York Giants, not a good football team. So the state of New York football, not looking so good right now.
Good. It's about time they don't have a dominant force.
Exactly. Well, last year they stunk too, but New York always is usually screw really them. Good and everything. Exactly. And, The Lions are sort of the heartbreak kids of the NFL. They are probably, you know, we could say for a while as Browns fans, we were probably the most tortured fan base in all of sports. I think it's the Detroit Lions without a doubt now. The only thing with them is they really don't have a ton of like playoff experience. So they, you know, they don't have that heartbreak late in the season. Their teams just stink all year long. So it's,
but they have flashes,
but they have this new coach, Dan Campbell, I think is the name. He is almost more like a military, guy, dude. He's like up in your face. He's, you know, got all these one-liners and stuff like that. But, the Lions really deserve to win that game against Baltimore. They, let me see, what was the final score? 19-17 Baltimore. Actually, the Baltimore Ravens and the Detroit Lions played a game about 7-8 years ago that ended on the same final score. Justin Tucker at the time hit the NFL record long for longest field goal ever. He did it again on Sunday. So he hit a 67-yard field goal. And if you have not seen the video, watch it.
That's crazy.
Because, he's kicking the ball from midfield, you know, so you always add 17 yards from wherever the ball is spotted. So the ball spotted at midfield, you know, the snap back is 7 yards and then the end zone additional 10 yards. So you always add 17. So the 50 plus the 17, 67-yard field goal,
dang.
The ball hits the crossbar, bounces up, and then for the heartbreak of the Detroit fans, you can see them like, yeah, you know, because they were like, he missed. And then it, you know, the ball, you know, turns over and goes over the crossbar. Detroit loses. Baltimore wins. And Detroit got hosed twice on that. One was self-inflicted. They gave up a 4th and 19 and Baltimore was at their own 10-yard line. So they get that. And then there was a delay of game. Baltimore had the ball, you know, moving and the clock was running. There was a delay of game for 2 full seconds. The referees don't call it. They get into field goal territory and they're able to kick that field goal. So the refs, I don't like to point the fingers too much at the refs, but they really hosed the Detroit Lions this weekend. Yep. And then obviously the Browns, the Bengals who beat the Steelers, and the Ravens are now all 2-1 with the Pittsburgh Steelers falling to the Cincinnati Bengals. They are now 1-2. So a couple real quick notes from the NFL, just some games that I thought stood out to me. Aaron Rodgers had 37 seconds. And I know a lot of people he's over the hill. He should be hosting Jeopardy. He had 37 seconds. 49ers go up 28-27. 2 passes, gets them into field goal territory. They kick the field goal, win the game 30-28. The Vikings dominated Seattle for the most part. That is the Browns' next opponent. We'll talk about them soon. The Raiders win in overtime. The Jets just got demolished by the Broncos. And then the game of the day was probably the Rams and the Buccaneers. Brady struggled a little bit, and the Rams really look like a force to be reckoned with. So we'll check that out. And also the one other game I want to talk about, the San Diego Chargers. See, I did it again. The Los Angeles Chargers defeated the Kansas City Chiefs 30-24, which puts Kansas City in last place in their division. Now, it's only three games in. Kansas City's going to be fine. Yep. But that defense is not great for Kansas City. Not great. So they're going to have to outscore a lot of people. And when you got Patrick Mahomes, when you have Travis Kelce, when you have Tyreek Hill, you're going to be able to do that for the most part. But I think if the Browns play them 10 times, you know, it's probably split 50-50. I think if the really, really good teams play, the Chiefs, you know, they see some blood in the water. There's sharks right now, and they're going to go after the Chiefs as well. Now, speaking of blood in the water, I think these AFC North teams see it with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know we have some Steeler fans that watch the show and don't always love my commentary on the Cleveland Browns and not talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers enough. But I do have a ton of Pittsburgh Steeler friends. And, you know, I talk to them and they have some real, real concerns. Number one, their real concern is the offensive line. Number two, their 1A is Ben Roethlisberger. They have great skill positions at wide receiver. They have a really solid looking running back in Najee Harris, but Ben Roethlisberger looks old. He looks old. He's getting hit a lot. He can't get the ball downfield. And he's getting sacked left and right. And that offensive line is not allowing him to, you know, have time to throw. Najee Harris, again, looks good, but not necessarily as a runner. He's a really good pass catcher out of the backfield. But, you know, Mike Tomlin kind of said something to this past weekend after the game, something to the along the lines of like, we shot all our bullets. Basically, like, we, you know, there was this fourth down play where they swing it out to Najee Harris, and it's like, it's fourth and 10, you know, you got to get 10 yards. It's a must gain situation, and they come up short. And, you know, but to Roethlisberger's credit, he had three passes before that all could have been caught. I think Ebron dropped one, and I'm not sure who dropped the other two, but, you know, the Steelers just, they look great out of the gates the second half against Buffalo, and then really have dropped the ball against no pun intended, against the Raiders and the Bengals this past weekend. So the Bengals, the Browns, and the Ravens sit at 2-1, and the Steelers sit at 1-2. Here's their upcoming game this weekend. The Bengals take on the Jaguars on Thursday night. I'm expecting the Bengals. Bengals, actually, their schedule, looking at it, is pretty easy at the beginning of the season, and I think they're going to have a rough second half of the year. The Ravens take on the Broncos. Broncos look good so far. And the Browns travel to Minnesota, take on the Vikings. And the Steelers go to Green Bay. That's going to be another tough one for the Steelers. So we'll see how this all unfolds. We'll talk more about some of these games coming up on Thursday's show. I do want to switch now to the college football scene, Ohio State. I actually was able to go to the Ohio State game on Saturday. It was a lot of fun to be back in the shoe and to be amongst, you know, it holds about 105,000. I think there was about 95,000 in attendance. You know, again, COVID protocols. A lot of people don't want to be out in that big of a group. Night game against an inferior opponent. But some of my biggest takeaways from that game are this. So this was the first time in Ohio State history, that a true freshman quarterback and a true freshman running back started in the backfield together. Sorry, taking a sip of water here. So that would be Kyle McCord, who replaced C.J. Stroud because C.J. Stroud was resting his shoulder, and Travion Henderson. I'm going to make a bold prediction here. I think Travion Henderson ends up in New York as a Heisman finalist by the end of the year. He is that good. He may be the best freshman running back Ohio State has had since Archie Griffin. That includes Zeke Elliott. That includes Eddie George. That includes J.K. Dobbins, and on and on and on with the list of elite Ohio State running backs. Beanie Wells is another guy that I could think of in that list. So he is going to possibly end up in New York for the Heisman. So that will be my bold prediction for him going forward. So let's talk real quick about Kyle McCord. Kyle McCord had a slow start. His first few passes didn't even really get past the line of scrimmage, but he has elite weapons. When you have Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Jackson Smith-Njigba, you know, the running back situation, Jeremy Ruckert, you have just all these weapons and a great offensive line. Your job is to get the ball in your playmaker's hands and let them do the work. That's it. It's as simple as that. Get the ball to those guys. Get out of the way. Let them do their work. Try not to make mistakes. So Kyle McCord, a slow start, but ended up 13 of 19 for 319 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. And again, he is only the fourth true freshman to start at quarterback in Ohio State history. The others are Art Schleister, Terrell Pryor, and Braxton Miller. So three in recent memory and not a whole lot of guys before that. So again, Art Schleser, Terrell Pryor, and Braxton Miller, and now Kyle McCord. CJ Stroud is a freshman, but he is a redshirt freshman because he was on the team last year. The defense looks much improved. It got to the quarterback. They also had nine sacks like the Browns did this weekend. Again, it's Akron, and you're going to hear that. It's Akron, it's Akron, it's Akron. Akron is not a great football team. We all know that. However, you have to play the person across from you. And the Buckeyes still got to the quarterback. They were able to shut him down. The Akron actually went down and scored a touchdown on their first drive. And I think that was a little bit of a wake-up call. So, you know, the Ohio State defense fixed it, corrected it. And then Joe, I remember you even texted me on Saturday. You're like, I think we're going to be okay on the point total. So yeah. Ohio State 59, Akron 7, the spread was 49.5. Akron got down to the Ohio State, I think 10 yard line with about 4 seconds left and ended up not scoring. They got sacked on the last play of the game. So a lot of people in Vegas might've been sweating that out.
Yeah, right.
but the defense is, looked better. Again, it's Akron. I'm going to sound redundant on that, but we'll talk. You know, we have liked to poke fun at Rutgers before on the show, but Rutgers is a decent team. That's their next opponent. We'll talk about them on Thursday. But Ohio State has a full-fledged youth movement going on outside of the wide receiver position and outside of the offensive line. So the youth movement, again, the quarterbacks, the running backs, the defensive ends, the defensive backs, the linebackers, a lot of young guys getting good opportunities to play. And this team is sort of, let's just say they're in the oven right now. They're kind of baking. It might not look good now, but once it cooks a little bit, comes out of the oven, it's going to look like a great situation. So, JT Tuamolo, Jack Sawyer, Cam Martinez, Denzel Burke, Cody Simon. You can go on and on and on down the list of especially the defensive players that are making an impact right now. Ohio State's best linebacker might be a former running back in Steel Chambers. He very well, he looked great on Saturday, and he's one of those guys that just has a nose for the football. And if he continues to be that guy, by the time Big Ten play comes along, by the time things really need to get going, when you're playing some of the bigger boys, he is going to be an impactful player, and hopefully they see that in Columbus. So the black eye kind of for Saturday was the Kayvon Pope situation. So Kayvon Pope is a senior linebacker. He is, you know, he's a guy that played a lot of special teams and was mixed in. I think he was brought in like mostly during obvious passing situations, you know, to cover a linebacker or to cover a a running back or a tight end, maybe coming out of the backfield. And, you know, didn't get a ton of playing time. He's one of those guys that I believe got an extra year because of the whole COVID situation. But in the second quarter, it was actually on a pick six in the second quarter when Ohio State returned it for a touchdown. He basically threw a fit. He, you know, was waved off. He thought he was coming on the field. Taraja Mitchell, who is another Buckeyes linebacker, sort of waved him off the field, saying, no, you know, it's not your time right now, whatever it might be. And, you know, apparently that pissed him off. He didn't like it, whatever, rubbed him the wrong way. So he kind of threw a little temper tantrum, walked to the locker room. An Ohio State staff member, I think it was CJ Barnett, ran and got him, brought him back. But, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but basically what happened, he got to the locker room, he tweeted out, and I'm not going to say what he tweeted out, but basically F Ohio State. And, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that. And so they get him back on the field. He kind of looks like he throws his gloves in the stands or was going to take off his jersey. I don't know what it was, but, you know, Ryan Day basically said, you know, go to the locker room, get out of here, or whatever. That happened in the locker room with the tweets. You cannot tweet that and make things that are in the locker room public. You know, every, probably from the high school level on, there's never going to be a perfect locker room situation from day one to the last day. It just doesn't happen. Especially these guys are competitive, or girls, whatever it might be, in any sport, you're going to have competitive people. That's just the nature of football. Your tensions are high. Everybody's running a little bit hotter than they might. And I think this got the best of him. He, you know, went to Twitter, tweeted it out, and that basically got him kicked off the team. He later apologized for it, but Ryan Day, I think, did the right thing by setting the tone and just saying, you know, this cannot be something that happens at Ohio State. This cannot be something that, you know, we have too high of a standard. And I'm going to give you just real quick my thinking of why this happened. So last year, the COVID protocol, guys are playing this year that normally would be graduated, would be in the grad transfer portal, would have moved on to the NFL, whatever it might be. So college rosters are bigger than ever this year because of that rule. Now, Ohio State recruits with the best of them. They had the number one recruiting class in the country this season. These freshmen are going to play. They're also playing over guys that have been there for 4 and 5 years. Those older guys probably don't like that. And, you know, they think maybe, hey, I've waited my turn. It's my turn up, and you're playing this kid that's straight out of high school over me. And I can understand that frustration. However, as a coach, you will put the best 11 guys on the field that will win you the game. You might work some other guys in there that, you know, situationally, and that's kind of what Kayvon Pope was. But again, I feel bad about the whole situation. He's probably a 22, 23 year old kid. He's going to end up in the portal. Hopefully he atones for his mistake. Hopefully he ends up somewhere that can get him back on his feet. Ohio State's going to keep him on scholarship, but he is off the football team. And, you know, that's a tough lesson to learn. So what I did is I compared it to the groundskeeper from the movie Rudy. So maybe in 30 years, he'll be the head's groundkeeper at the Horseshoe, and he'll talk to some kid that's 5'0", 100 and nothing with hardly a speck of athletic ability. And we'll tell him that if he walks out on this team, it's going to be the biggest mistake he ever made. So I just thought that was you know, kind of funny, but in all seriousness, wish him the best of luck, but you can't tweet F the university and expect to still be on it. So again, that stuff, keep it in house and work it out amongst yourselves. But I know we have some high school kids that watch the show, especially on Thursdays, but whatever you're going to do, keep it in house. Talk to your coaches, talk to your teammates. Don't put it out there amongst the public. So that's my thoughts on that. Let's move now to the craziness that is college football. So the craziness that is college football, these are the new updated top 25 rankings. So you can still see, you know, there's some movement. Alabama, Georgia, Oregon, Penn State, Iowa, Oklahoma, Cincinnati, Arkansas, Notre Dame, and Florida round out the top 10. You will see Ohio State, even with a big win, dropped one spot to 11. But some of the big games this weekend, obviously we talked about Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Wisconsin. The final score does not indicate what this game was. Notre Dame won this game 41-13. Wisconsin was up 13-10 in the fourth quarter. Notre Dame had a kickoff return and proceeded to score 31 straight points to beat Wisconsin, who Wisconsin's offense stinks. Their defense is really, really good. But Notre Dame ends up blowing them out of the water based on that score. 41-13, Notre Dame moves up to number 9 in the country. Wisconsin drops out of the top 25. Oklahoma and West Virginia, another dogfight. Oklahoma was in. Oklahoma is ranked number 4 in the country. They drop but they end up winning 16-13 just by the skin of their teeth. Iowa was in a dogfight with Colorado State, but the number 5 ranked Iowa Hawkeyes defeat them 24-14. We had a big upset with Texas A&M falling to Arkansas. Arkansas wins over the 7th ranked Aggies. Arkansas now jumps to number 8, and Texas A&M drops all the way to 15. Joe, my voice is doing it. It's about once a month. So let's see what else. Clemson. Oh my goodness. Clemson, first time. Now in the coaches poll, they are out of the top 25. In the AP poll, they're still holding on to number 25. But they lose in double overtime to unranked North Carolina State, who is now ranked 23rd this week, 27-21. Baylor upsets the number 14 ranked Iowa State Cyclones, 31-29. Rutgers and Michigan. Michigan was up 20-3 in this game. Rutgers gets it to 20-13, has two opportunities. They miss a easy field goal and two other opportunities inside Michigan's red zone. They don't capitalize. So Michigan, who has looked really, really good at the beginning of the season, did not look good. I think that's more on Michigan than to Rutgers' credit, because Rutgers, you know, played them really tough. They ended up winning the second half 10-0, but Michigan really struggled in that ball game. Nebraska and Michigan State, the number 20th ranked Spartans, who are now 17, pull it out in overtime, 23-20. Georgia Tech upsets North Carolina, 45-22. Auburn, who nearly lost to FCS, Georgia State, ends up pulling it out, 33-23. They're hanging on to the 22nd ranked spot in the poll. And then Oklahoma State defeats Kansas State in an upset, 31-20. Obviously, Alabama, Georgia, Oregon, Penn State, Florida, BYU, Coastal Carolina, and UCLA all win comfortably. So that's a look at the top 25. Some crazy, crazy action. I'm going to talk to you Thursday about some of the big games of the weekend. This might be the best weekend of college football all year. I think there's 10 games that are just going to be phenomenal games this weekend, if not more. So we will get into that on Thursday's show. And then just a few more notes before we get to our interview with Jess. So yesterday, if you have been a Cleveland Indians fan, might have been a sad day for you. Yesterday was the last home game in Cleveland Indians history. So September 27th, they did get the win over the Kansas City Royals, but it was their last game as the Cleveland Indians. So this marks 106 years of Cleveland Indians baseball that are now, you know, they're going to move on to the Guardians. And so they have, so let me just set this up. So the Indians have basically been around since 1900, but I'm going to set it up from 1912 on. So from 1912 to 1914, the team was officially named the Molly Maguires, but popularly was known as the Naps, because in 1915, they had a player named Napoleon Lojoway, I believe it was, and he was eventually traded. And then the team became permanently known as the Indians, a nickname that was used in the 1890s when an American Indian, Luis Chief, and I believe it's Sockalexis, played for the old National League Cleveland Spiders. So it was sort of in tribute to him. Over time, you know, and as the cancel culture, you know, I'm not going to get into a political thing here, but I think it was time. A lot of fans aren't going to like it, but I think it was time to move on from the Indians name. Whether you like it or not, hopefully you're still going to be a Cleveland Indians, Cleveland Guardians, whatever you want to call them. Just call them the Tribe, even. Hey, whatever you want to call them, but hopefully you're still rooting for the team going forward. So they will be known as the Guardians in 2022. And if you're a big Indians fan, you still got like six games left to root for the Cleveland Indians. As they, you know, finish out the season this week. And then the final note I have before we get to our interview is United States beats, they beat Europe in the Ryder Cup. They win 19-9. And it was a really, really cool tournament. This is one of the coolest sporting events because, you know, everybody thinks a lot of times golf is being stuffy and kind of, you know, country club and all this and that. But they are legitimately playing for country pride, for prominence. And Europe really has dominated the United States for the most part. But the Americans came out and just whooped Europe. So a couple things. The I'm just going to go over the United States team real quick. So the United States team had Colin Morikawa, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, Patrick Cantlay. And then the captain's pick was Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, Jordan Spieth, Harris English, Daniel Berger, and Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler had a great tournament. He ended up beating John Rahm, who is the number one player in the world. It's just basically swept him. And the Americans had a phenomenal weekend. And I think it was in Whistling Straits, which is in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. So pretty awesome weekend. I would definitely put the Ryder Cup in a bucket list of one of my sporting events that I would love to attend one day. But it was funny because Dustin Johnson is kind of the older guy on the thing, and they basically party and drink after, and they're saying like, Dustin, can you hang with these young guys? And he was basically like, hell yes I can. And you know, he might not be as alert the next morning as some of the younger guys, but I'm sure he held his own. So congratulations to the United States with the Ryder Cup. Okay. Before we get to our interview, I just want to set it up just a little bit. So our interview is going to be with Jess Krauser. She actually graduated high school with me, Boardman grad 2000. And again, she has been diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's disease. She is going to talk to you all about that. She is a phenomenal person, one of the most positive, strong people I know. She is going to talk to you about what the disease is and, you know, and how it affects her. And she's going to basically just bring a lot of education and awareness to this topic. And also there is a 5K in her honor that will raise funds for the Michael J. Fox Foundation this weekend in Columbus. We'll talk about that on the interview. And but if you're unable, if you're from Youngstown or the Youngstown area, there will also be a walk at the Mill Creek Hike and Bike Trail in Boardman this weekend, and you can learn about it, and she'll talk to you. If you would like to donate at all, you can all obviously do that. But we're going to share that interview right now, and hope you get something out of this, because honestly, it's eye-opening. It really is. So here's our interview with Jess Krauser.
Hey guys, Justin Coffin for the 330 Sports Show. Joining me today, we have a special guest, Jessica Krauser. Jess and I kind of go way back. Jess and I are 2000 BHS graduates. So I've known Jess for a while, and she has given us the opportunity to share her story a little bit. So Jess, first of all, welcome. And, you know, tell us a little bit about what you're going through, and then we'll get into your fundraiser that's coming up.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it, and for all of your support. So I'm going to tell our age, so hopefully you don't mind that.
I don't. Well, I'm older than you, so go for it.
Oh, all right. So I'm not 40 yet. I'm still 39. But 2 years ago, at the age of 37, I was diagnosed with, it's called young onset Parkinson's disease. It's called that just because normally Parkinson's patients are over the age of 50 or 60. It was just symptoms that I've noticed that I had, and being my own advocate and getting myself to doctors, and to the right neurologist, they finally diagnosed me with young onset Parkinson's. But what really the journey that I've been taking is around educating people, because when I was first diagnosed, I was actually relieved. I had issues for like 2 years and I didn't know what it was. I was going to see just random doctors. My foot hurt, so I went to see, had my foot x-rayed, and you know, other things like that. So I checked all the boxes, so I knew what was coming. My husband, on the other hand, was devastated. And I felt bad because I didn't understand why, but I was doing so much research on my own to try and understand what was going on. And he didn't up until that point. So all he thought about was grandparents or friends' parents that have Parkinson's, and they're older, and they're hunched over, they struggle, they need wheelchairs. And, you know, he immediately thought, oh my gosh, our life, what we thought was going to be, is completely different. And so I urged him to read the things I was reading on young onset Parkinson's and Parkinson's in general. You know, if people take a hold of what they have and learn that exercise is key, you can do a lot more with your life for a lot longer if you take care of yourself. So that brought us to, you know, I had 2 years of having my own ups and downs. It hasn't been, you know, hasn't been rosy the whole time.
Sure.
But this year, my friends, a couple of my friends got together because they're like, we wanted to do something for you. And they're like, we don't know what or how or what that, you know, what do you do for somebody in a situation like this? But they know I love to speak. I love to educate, make people aware of things. So they wanted to give me a louder voice. And so they started what they called the 5K for JK. I actually have my shirt on. I'll show you. See, 5K for JK.
Very nice. Very
for
nice.
Parkinson's awareness. And so they started that. Oh, there you go.
There we go. Background.
I know. So they started that for me, and it has taken on a life of its own. I think we have almost 400 people registered. We've raised around $65,000 and growing for the Michael J. Fox Foundation. And it's just been amazing. And so now I'm having the ability to do things like this and other interviews to bring awareness, but again, not just awareness around the disease itself, but awareness for what can you do for yourself today to live a better life.
Absolutely. So, you know, you are really preaching the education of Parkinson's, and, you know, me, I'm very novice. I know the basics. Obviously we all think of Michael J. Fox, especially he was diagnosed as a younger person. But tell us a little bit, you had mentioned a couple years ago, you started to see some symptoms. How did you, after reading about this, how did you realize, you know, this might be what I have?
Oh, it didn't click with me until I saw one of my doctors. So I first started and I had tremors. So like, even like right now, like I don't tremor that bad. But I do it right now because I'm a little anxious and nervous just being on a Zoom right now. So even at meetings at work, that's how I get. So any type of tension or feeling you get, I didn't realize it though at the time. So I just didn't recognize my hand would shake. My primary care physician was like, well, it could just be an essential tremor. Like a lot of people actually have essential tremor. It's just, it's benign and it's not much you can do. She's like, if it becomes bothersome, like affecting your work or your day-to-day life, you know, you can go see a neurologist. Well, at that time I was 35. I'm like, I'm not gonna see a neurologist, like seriously. I'm like, my hand's just shaking. So I waited till the following year and I did a half marathon with my sister, Trisha. Her and her husband do all these marathons. So I did a half with her, first and last one I'll ever do. But then from there, my foot and my leg was cramping all the time. And I remember having my husband like constantly like massaging my calf because I would have a knot. And I mean, I would be in tears because he would be trying to get it out. And again, I just thought because I was doing this workout and running and I'd never done that before. But again, I got my foot checked out and then I went to go see my gynecologist, which she's the one that delivered my twins 11 years ago. So at the time I'm like, you know, she knows me better than anybody. And I was there for just a yearly checkup and she's like, why are you shaking? And I'm like, well, it's cold in here. And you know, I shake. And she's like, do you really? Yeah. And she's like, did you talk to your doctor? And I was like, yeah, but it was last year. And she said, it's just an essential tremor. And she kept looking at me and she's like, that's a little bit more than an essential tremor. She's like, I want you to go talk to somebody. I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, I'm going to give you some names. So she gave me names to a couple neurologists. And so I was able to get in a couple months later to just a primary neurologist. Sure. And he did some assessments and we did a EMG where they like stick needles in the side that's affected and they shock you a little bit. It really wasn't very fun.
Yeah.
And did an MRI and everything checked out fine. And it wasn't until that time, so in early 2019, where I started noticing things and other people started. So my mom mentioned one time, she's like, why aren't you using your arm? Like, why aren't you using your right arm when you're cooking? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, I can move it all around, but I was holding it. And that's like one of the signs, like you hold your arm and you don't swing it. And then I wasn't using the mouse on my computer. I was using like the middle pad part because I couldn't get my hand to shake that way. It's very rigid. So I remember my husband was at a national sales meeting for a week. And so I was by myself with the kids so they'd go to bed and I'd start doing research and I diagnosed myself. I'm like, this is the last thing you're supposed to do. But I'm like, I have like every single thing here. So I went to my follow-up appointment with my neurologist and told him all the symptoms I've been feeling. I didn't tell him what I thought it was. And he's like, everything you say sounds like Parkinson's. He's like, but in clinic test, he's like, I just don't see it.
Sure.
So he's like, take medication and, you know, or you can go see a movement specialist. I'm like, let's go see that specialist. Mm-hmm. So I saw Dr. Malone. She's at in Columbus at Ohio Health. And within the hour that I was there, she took my journal, read all my notes, watched me walk around, do the different assessments, and she diagnosed me right there.
Interesting. So do you notice, obviously, since you have been diagnosed, and I see on Facebook and, you know, I've talked to you a little bit, but you've become this workout crazy.
Oh, yeah. Now.
So explain how that, from what you understand, helps your condition.
Well, I hated working out. Like, I never worked out really before. I mean, I would every once in a while, like in high school, but I'm probably in the best shape of my life in my late 30s, which is great, but it took Parkinson's to get me there. But one of the things my first original neurologist, when he said, you know, you're probably just stressed and anxious. I'm like, really, I'm not. Like, he's like, exercise is great for that. So I'm like, fine. So I started exercising then. And then it was 6 months later when I saw the movement specialist. And she said, after she diagnosed me, she's like, the best thing you can do for yourself right away is to exercise. She's like, exercise is known. There's no clinical proof of it because it's difficult, I guess, to do, but it's known to slow the progression. Because when you think about it, Parkinson's, it's a disease, a disorder with your movement. So you should keep moving to get things going. So so I started doing my research, and there's actually a local gym in town, which I'm thrilled about because not many people have that. It's called PD Next Steps. And Melissa Carlson is the owner, and she's our trainer, and we have Parkinson's classes every day. So I started exercising with them. You know, I walk in the door and I'm all bubbly, and they're like, who are you? They're like, are you a new trainer, instructor? I'm like, no, I have Parkinson's too. And they're like, wow. So they're a wonderful bunch of people, great community. So we exercise every day, and it's retrain our brain, because with Parkinson's, you lose dopamine. And everybody actually loses dopamine as you age. A neurologist actually told me before, he's like, we all lived until we were 100, 150. Everybody would have Parkinson's because you just lose dopamine as you age. I'm just losing mine I lost it as a much at a faster rate. But dopamine affects your movements and affects your mood. It affects your cognition, lots of things. But so exercise has been key, you know, for the depression and the anxiety we feel, but also for the movements. And it's, again, retraining our brain of picking up our leg, swinging your arm, making big movements, and making sure your body's doing it so that if you do ever get caught up and you're having to do something quickly, hopefully your retrained neurons will get you there.
It's very, very interesting. And, you know, again, I'm not someone that knows a whole lot about this disease. So, you know, you're teaching me as we're just talking here.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to make awareness to this. So do they have any idea why this happens, where it comes from, or is it just luck of the draw?
It's kind of like a little bit of both. So they don't really know. There's, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of gene therapy for other diseases and sure. things that specialized drugs that you can get. But the thing with Parkinson's is there can be, I think, up to like 20 or 25 different genes that could be affected, which is why it makes it so difficult for them to figure out how did I get it compared to somebody else.
Sure.
A lot of times they're saying like the, like when you spray your lawn with like pesticides, like that if people live near farms, that's shown to have it. But I did not live near a farm. It can also be hereditary, but I don't have anybody in my family that I'm aware of that has it. So it could just be luck of the draw. Like I was just born with a certain mutated gene or whatever. That got me to where I am. So that's what makes it really difficult for them to find a cure. So we have medicine that we can help manage our symptoms, but then we're also balancing side effects. And then there's surgery. Actually just sat through a webinar yesterday of a neurosurgeon talking about deep brain stimulation. And he's like, it's really not that bad. I'm like, brain surgery.
Sounds scary.
Like, yeah, but he's like, you know, you're in and out, but you know, it's for people, you know, it's something I could possibly do in a few years, depending on my severity, but it can take you back. He's like, it could take you back to like 7 to 10 years prior, you know. So if you are having tremors a lot, and I know a guy who has this DBS surgery, and he'll shake and then he'll turn his DBS button on, and like all of a sudden he's like this, and it's stable. Mm. It's incredible. So, you know, just things like that I love learning about, you know, being in the pharma industry, my husband's in the medical industry. It's like just learning about all these great innovations that there might be something to come. But at the same time, again, that's why we're, you know, we donate to Michael J. Fox Foundation to find a cure for research, or for research to find a cure. But at the end of the day, it's like, it's not happening overnight. So what can I do for myself right now? Because like my neurologist always has to remind my husband, she's like, honey, this is degenerative. Like, this is not going to get better. Which I always feel bad when she says that to him, but it's like, you have to remind people, like, this is how I am right now, and I don't know what I'm going to be like next year, 10 years.
Sure.
So.
You say that, but to me, you have the best attitude, and you're one of the most positive people that I probably can think of. So
thanks.
What you're doing right now, just keep it up, because, looking at some of the stats, I just did some basic research, mm-hmm. but about 10 million people worldwide mm-hmm. have some sort of Parkinson's, and 60,000 Americans each year are diagnosed with Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. So, it's not something that, like cancer, that usually someone that has it directly that might be related to you. But so this is not as common, but it affects people, like you said, degeneratively. And you bringing awareness to this is fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about your 5K and, when that's coming up. I'm actually going to share my screen real quick. Sure. I have the website up right now.
Okay.
And then you can just sort of explain what this is all about, where it's at, and we're actually doing a local event here in Youngstown as well as Columbus. So tell us about that.
So the 5K for JK, like I said, it's really just around bringing awareness to Parkinson's. So bringing people together and first making people not feel so scared. Even my kids, like they think about it, but it doesn't even bother them anymore. They're like, yeah, she shakes, she's fine. My kids are like, is there going to be like news people there? Like maybe I'll get on the news and I can show. I'm like, what? This is not about you. But it's one of those things. It's like, I want to raise awareness even at this event to lessen the fear that people have, and just show them just through exercise, just get up every day, mm-hmm. walk around, do something with your body. You can help yourself tremendously. I've seen it happen at the gym where, people can only raise their arm like this. And after they've come to the gym for, a number of months, they can raise their arm fully straight. And it's amazing because they're moving. So I really want this walk to bring down the fear that people have, because it is fear of the unknown. Like, but nobody knows what's going to happen to them. Sure. But at the end of the day, I think I remember writing it to myself in a journal. I was like, so basically what my doctor told me is take medication, which a lot of people do, exercise and eat healthy. I'm like, shouldn't we all be doing that?
Right.
So it's like just living a healthy life, healthy, active life to keep going. And so the event is going to be on October 3rd on a Sunday in Powell, Ohio. So it's actually in my neighborhood, which is great. And we're going to have a member from the Michael J. Fox Foundation come down, and she's going to share what they do with this money, which it goes to research to various pharma and medical companies, but talk about the success that they've had there. There are going to be just a couple of fun things for the kids to do, but really just walk and have the community. And it's a lot of family, a lot of friends. I have friends from college that are flying in, and all my friends, the LOD from Youngstown, they'll all be there. So I'm really excited for that. There are a lot of people in Youngstown that aren't able to make the trip. So a couple of my mom's friends are getting together and they're doing a walk at the hike and bike trail. So it's not like an official walk, but they're getting together anybody who wants to do it at the same time at 2:00 at the Hike and Bike Trail in Mill Creek Park. So if anybody wants to join from Y-Town, they're doing that there.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. And again, your positivity, your attitude is what makes this great, because I think a lot of people, like you said, you're trying to explain to people, don't be scared, but do the right things to help mm-hmm. you. To help you improve, to help you get better. Like you said, like the guy, for example, that couldn't lift his arm, and then, going, eating right, going to the gym, that helps. So one thing, if you can, I guess it's hard to say this, but if you could tell someone that might be diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's, what would be your message to that person?
It would be, don't wait. Don't sit around. I was actually on a different webinar last night for YOPD, and there's this guy, Jimmy Choi, who is very well known within the young onset Parkinson's group. And he's had it, I believe, for over 20 years. And so many people were asking him questions, and he said the same thing. He's like, I waited to tell people. Mm-hmm. I hid it. I didn't want to deal with it until there came a point that he had to. And I was the opposite, and I never really thought about it. That's just who I am, but that it's not the norm, but it should be. I told work right away. I told my family right away. I told my friends. I told my neighbors. And then I just got right into exercising. And there are so many people that I know that were diagnosed that they're like, I didn't even tell my family until for 10 years, let alone, the world. Sure. But once you open that up, again, it's just because people are like, I don't want them to look at me differently. I'm like, I didn't even think about that. Like, yeah. People are going to look if they're going to look, but there's nothing really to look at all the time. So it's just to be open, having your caregivers. I don't know if you saw that video I just posted last night about caregivers and my mom and my husband, Derek. Like, if it wasn't for them, I don't know if I would be as strong as to keep going and doing what I'm doing, but you need that support and people want to help. So I was never one to say like, yeah, please help me. But now I'm like, who cares? You can't go in this world on your own.
Mm-hmm. That's a great message. And you have a great home base. You have a great family. You have a great group of friends. And we're all here to support you. And I just want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to share this. And you have an open mic here if you ever need it. We'd love to share more information. So yeah. People that tell them real quick again when the 5K is.
So October 3rd. Sunday in Powell, Ohio at 2:00. The walk starts at 2:00. The festivities will start at 12:30. Or in Youngstown, same date, October 3rd, 2:00 at the Hike and Bike Trail in Mill Creek.
Very good. Very good. So please check that out. And also, Jess, could you share the website if anyone wants to check out and get some more information?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just www.5kforjk.org. So 5K for JK.
And if people can't make the either walk and maybe want to donate, how are they able to do that?
Yes. Yeah. So you're able to donate right on the website. It'll give information about the walk, and then there's a donation button, and that brings you to the Michael J. Fox page. Awesome. And that will be live. I think all the time. So, like I said, we're already up to 65,000. Our goal was 50, and we're just going to keep moving up. I told them our new goal should be 100 because we're not even at the walk yet.
So. Absolutely, absolutely. What a great foundation you guys have started. What a great event and great cause. Just this little interview here we've done, I've learned more in this 20-30 minutes than I knew about it all beforehand. So thank you for educating us. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And thank you for being just such a positive, awesome person. So Jess, we appreciate you. We wish you all the best. And again, if you need anything, just reach out to us and we're here to help you.
Great. Well, thank you. And I appreciate the support with the walk and everything. So I appreciate being on the show. Thanks.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be in touch and good luck. And everybody, October 3rd, check it out. Try to get there if you can. If you can't, make a donation.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.